different kinds of noises the wind is making in this space. If at some point, because of the noises or my voice, you can't hear me at the ends, raise your hand or something, make a sign. I really like the image that that Jaya gave a couple of days ago of the with the wind and the sails and the ship that we're on, and this kind of the story hour. So I connect with that. This is a story time, which I also have at home. And I also had one meditation earlier where the wind was so strong and I was lying down, which I feel many times, not always, but can open vulnerability. So I really felt my organism frightened by the intensity of the wind, and it felt, this is hindrance day, I guess, for many. Or moments. It was interesting to feel it so strongly, not having a life trigger or an issue, just these sounds. When I first met practice, it was very quick. It was a quick love affair. It didn't take a lot. It wasn't over time, sort of a little bit by bit. It was yes. And it just felt so spot on, you know, sign me on. I'm in this. And I remember feeling in the first months, years, a very keen sense, a very clear sense of being on or being off. I'm with what I hear, what I know, what I expect, my effort is matching what I hear about, and it's progress, or it's on, or it's going. And then when my inner situation seemed very difficult, it was clear that I was off. It wasn't working. I wasn't with the right equipment. And, you know, even if it's a short time of feeling that way, I think it's very familiar, and we talk about it as difficult moments, and we talk about it as hindrances, and we talk about it as guests, and we meet it, and we get encouraged when we feel discouraged to work our way through those. But it's such a not one time thing, and one thing can feel like, okay, this fits, maybe this can be incorporated, this down moment, but not this. And then, okay, maybe that, but definitely not this. And it's so it feels very common that we come into practice with this kind of narrow view. I hope to be good enough to get through there, the small opening for where everything is working well. My system is working well with practice, and when I get too clunky, there's no way I'm going to fit through. So just feeling into that sense of so many moments of shift, so many moments of like those images where you see one and suddenly you see the other. You see the woman or the, you know, whatever, those background, foreground, and you can't see them both. You can't see them both at the same time. A couple of months ago, Sandhya Ji and I taught a weekend at Endor, and Christopher Titmus was there. And it was a happy meeting. Christopher Titmus, a teacher that many of you know and many of you don't, is a very old friend of the Israeli practice community, comes a lot and supports a lot and teaches all over the world. And he kindly agreed to give a talk at our weekend. And he told a story that I hadn't heard before, which was surprising in itself. And the story was of a long time ago, when he had been a monk in Thailand. One monk in the community that he hadn't met before he arrived in his 6 or 7 years of being a monk, had taken a vow to practice in isolation, not far away, but in isolation in a cave, in the forest, for 20 years, correct? For 20 years. So he knew there was this guy out there. No? So come, yeah. Sorry. You're invited to come also closer, and I'll try. So he knew about this guy who had taken a vow to see, to discover what could be discovered by total devotion to only practice and no waste of time of anything else. People, community. And it was in the beginning time of Christopher being a monk there that 19 and a half years had passed. And actually this monk, I don't remember if he was Western or Thai, but in any case, doesn't matter, started suffering from physical pain. It was actually piles or hemorrhoids, very extreme physical pain, which is, anyway, and so it was so extreme that he had to leave, and he left before the 20 years. And he came back to the community, and Christopher met him, and everyone else got to see him again. And he was asked, and, you know, what can you tell us? And he said, anyway, Christopher said, he said, complete waste of my time. Only thing important is love. Only thing important is human connections. That's it. So I found it also interesting that pain, like the body, the kind of bottom line very often, is what took him out of there. But I also find it kind of a joke on a joke. Like, it's not a waste of time. Or else life is a waste of time. Because 20 years is, what is that? Kind of a drop. So I find it so connecting that Jaya keeps using the term lifetime. Like, we are here for 5 days or six, but we have a lifetime to tend to. And so 20 years may be for each of us, you know, a bigger or a smaller chunk. But in reality, I mean, there are so many stories which seem like parables, but maybe they're actually true stories of students, like in the old text, of students who 10 years to learn this, another, and then come back. And take another 10 years, and then come back. And just, you know, a few things we could reflect on just with this true and simple story. One is to imagine this man for a moment. Like, we chose to come for 5 days. He chose to take 20 years. What his days were like what he met there. And just the everything, like, let your imagination, you know, just the times of going loose with his form of practice and being plagued by doubt and discouragement, and the times of being really on it, 5 in the morning, 4 in the morning, this, that, only this, wash the shirt, da da da, sit. And being plagued by rebellion, stiffness, rigidity, pain, different kinds of pain. The so much doubt that he must have faced, the so much, and every other human demon that's been invented, no doubt came to visit him. So that, in other words, not possible that instead of going, someone would say, look, forget the 20 years, just, you know, connect with people. And, you know, so I think we can bring that to our life, wherever we are in it, whatever number. And just think, some relationships that we're in, like the first 10 years is just to learn to listen. And maybe the next 10 years to learn to ask. And, you know, so to begin to get a sense of the real slowness of learning. And I really love the poem that Jaya gave of the, which you shared in Tiru, and I think it, I didn't really get it. The mother tongue poem, which I feel really, really resonates as the metaphor that it is about life, about something difficult loving you and having the charge of loving something difficult. And it also really, really resonates as a mother, which kind of from the moment this appears, it is more easy for many of us as mothers to live up to the difficult charge, more or less. This is kind of an aside, but anyway, when I was pregnant with my first son, I was really happy to be pregnant, and there was all that tests and tending and knowing and preparation and birth, and we did a home birth. We prepared to do a home birth, and we actually did a home birth, and it went well, and it was so euphoric that it went well, and it was such a thrill and a relief to have a baby suddenly in the house on a cold winter in Jerusalem evening. And my friends were there, and after they left, the midwife was there for a few more hours, just tending to and swaddling and washing, weighing, I don't know. And then she turned to go also, to go home. And it was, she was with her coat already, and she kind of turned and she said, you guys know how to take care of a baby, right? And we kind of looked at each other, you know, like full comedy. Did you know? You know, it could have been scripted on a simple kind of sitcom. But it feels like that. Like we get this basket of life, which is our life, and it has absolutely nothing written on the instructions. So it really does take 20 years and in and not. A close friend of mine from Hungary, this was a long time ago, and we were friends when we were young, and I knew her when she had this boyfriend and that boyfriend, and at some point she moved back to, she was living in Israel, at some point she moved back to Hungary, and she, I think, called me to say that she had met someone that she really, really, really liked, and that she would stay with, that she knew she would stay with, and she told me, this is how she knew. It's a nice story. They started both to really like each other. And at some point he said to her, he confessed to her a problem that he had that would affect both of them. And he, I won't go into, but. personal problem. But just, you know, you, with the imagination, I'm dealing with this problem, but I have this problem. And she said, oh no, that I can't handle. And he kind of, his grace, he kind of looked at her and said, well then what can you handle? And it stopped her. And she said, okay, let's try. So that kind of willingness. It feels like the two qualities of practice that take a long time and that we really need to touch and taste and get on and fall off and try to find our own way, as Jaya keeps saying. One has to do with going wide, like being receptive to not just to much more. And the other seems to be about coming in much closer than we usually do. Like not, oh, that I can't handle. In. Sometimes I feel just this image comes of how programmed we are for the narrow and for the what's wrong. As if we, you know, walk into a house like that's huge and has so many things going on in it and people and cooking and but the TV is on. And the program is, what's wrong with me? Or what's wrong with life? Or what's wrong with them? Or what's wrong? And it's, you know, we don't see anything. We don't smell anything. We just... So what could encourage us or remind us to turn it down a little, or walk around a little, or sniff around. I notice sometimes there are certain busy kinds of days where it's like I'm picking problems, like I'm making a little necklace. This is broken. This is a problem that needs to be, and I'm, in a way, I'm waiting to meet my partner at the end of the day. So that we can kind of sit and I can share with him all the things that need fixing, like literal things and behaviors and things. And I'm waiting, and finally the children are asleep, and I manage to actually look in his eyes and see that there's a person there. And that he's also had a day, like a completely other day, where he's not gathering. Or he is, but... And it can just fall away, like we can just say hello, sometimes. So we know this story, or metaphor also, from the Zen tradition, maybe from the whole Buddhist tradition, of the fish who's thirsty, the thirsty fish. Thirsty fish goes to master, complains of condition, thirst, and the master just laughs. You're in the ocean. You have nothing, you have no lack. And it's a metaphor that every time I've met it has either made me happy or made me uncomfortable. Because it's a very strong message of how it is that we can take the full ocean of life in our little pool and take also our thirst, acknowledge also our condition of thirst. We're not just neutral. We're not going to cure the thirst for living, for contact, for freedom, for love, for connection, for understanding. Thirst is there. Sense is dry, parched. And how to feel that this pond, this ocean, these moods, these people, these problems, these non-problems, this boredom, this everything in every ripple, in the smallest resolution, the atmosphere holding all of the supposed things is nurturing for me, is food for me. I just came across this phrase someone used of simple but not simplistic. So when we talk about suffering or dukkha, when we talk about programming and habits, I think it's so vital to talk about. It's so vital to become familiar with, even though it's not the only or the most interesting thing necessarily. But it's so vital to see the patterns and where we pull, and also to feel, as Jaya so often says, that there's no food there. There isn't even a drop of water. That's also not necessarily true. The process of seeing it is very nourishing. And sometimes we get so familiar, 20 years, 19 and a half years down, with particular things that we see how dry they are, that bone. We see how dry, how unnourishing they are. And that can, so having gotten to, having the way we got to knowing that is by getting up close, by really feeling it out, by allowing it to, the the texture of our aggression and our self-pity and our demanding in the wrong place and all of those things, just feeling it until it's really, really known. And that whole process is very nourishing. And then trying to keep getting something out of it, believing in it, using that crutch, very unnourishing. And that's where very often, because it's still there, because it's still there after all these years, wide is so important. And I really feel these are, I mean, practices, life practices, but also here. Sometimes very close to what is painful, knowing the full texture and tone, and sometimes getting out of that short-sightedness and what else could be here, the creaking. That's also not so great, but okay, there's creaking, and there's... Part of what feels like it takes a very long time is to encourage our receptivity to more. Like, it's not just the habit of short-sightedness, there's also the habit of... It's almost like if it's sharp, we can get it. And if it's subtle, yeah, like thick-skinnedness. Mm. Like we're looking for strong sensation. And so much of the food in that pond doesn't register. So I really feel a lot of practice is just opening out to the supposedly light and boring of just this tingle and this buzz and this, until it feels like life, it feels like living, kind of come out of the trance of something has to really be, I'm the star of the show, and it's really great, or it's super bad. Pema Chodron says, give yourself the gift of giving up expectation for a cure for hot and cold. Give yourself that gift. Which is... When we take that good advice, that can open us to, okay, so what else? If I'm not going to make it not hot or not cold, if I can't force it and it won't be, then how can I open to just feeling all that range, including hot and cold, and all that range in between? I just came across a very beautiful story in a book by someone who runs a hospice, a Zen hospice for the dying in the United States, maybe in California, I can't remember. And I don't remember the author's name, who's the author is the person who started the hospice. But he tells of his encounter with a man who was once a successful guy, married and had a good job. And all at once, like in a period of a couple of years, he loses the job, the marriage breaks up, or in the other order, I'm not sure, and gets diagnosed with terminal cancer and doesn't have insurance and is in really bad shape. And he's homeless for a while, but he's so tormented that he tries to kill himself and doesn't succeed. And it's at the psychiatric hospital that the interview, the admissions interview, takes place with this guy who runs the hospice. And he takes him aside and they sit alone in a room together silently. And this guy has not experienced, hasn't come across practice So it was weird to him to just sit silently. He said, why are you doing this? I haven't sat quietly with anyone. But it was okay. And after some silence, the hospice guy says to him, what do you want? And he says, this is in sync with our theme, spaghetti. He doesn't say macaroni, he says spaghetti. And it wasn't the answer that he thought he was going to get, but he said, we do pretty good spaghetti at the hospice. And he said, okay. So that was the admissions process. And over a 3-month period, they had quite a few talks, and they actually became very, quite close. And at the end of a 3-month, within 3 months, this man's health was already really deteriorated, and he was in bed mostly in the room. And the hospice owner asked him, at some point came in to visit and said, how are you doing? And he said, I've never been happier. And the guy said, bullshit. Just, you know, the last time we talked, you said, unless you could take walks and write in your journal, life wasn't worth living. So what was that? And he said, oh, that was just chasing desire. And he said, no, the truth is, it wasn't the activities, it was the quality of the attention to the activities. And now I have that quality of attention to feeling the breeze coming in through the window and feeling the softness of the sheets. So that stayed with me. How we can not miss, how we can, we spoke about devotion yesterday, how we can find devotion to the quality of attention of what comes in our lives, whatever's here in our pond. Not just what pops out at us, the successes and the failures, the on the horse, off the horse. I want to share a poem. So it's a poem inspired by the teachings of a Japanese artist called Hokusai. Is that how you say his name? Hokusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention, notice. He says, keep looking, stay curious. He says, there is no end to seeing. He says, everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish, mountains, trees. Wood is alive. Water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us. He says, live with the world inside you. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Look, feel, let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. Thank you for listening.